Now, who could forget the final scene of Pretty Woman when, like a knight in shining armour on a white steed, Richard Gere rolls up the street in a white top, opened limousine, white open-topped limousine, to claim his princess, Julia... Stop laughing. Julia Roberts. Forgetting that she's working on the street as a prostitute, of course. Mm. The music you hear in that particular part is Verdi's, from Verdi's opera, La Traviata. And Blonidney Cuffey has just had her first taste of opera. Blonit, you're stunning in your ball gown.
Oh, well, I don't know if I was stunning, but the cast were absolutely stunning. Now, I am, and I was. It was said to me the other day that I am an opera virgin. It's okay to say that. I have no clue about opera. I went to see Aida last year in Verona, but that was because it was an open theatre and we're all together, we're on holidays, it was Bambi. I don't really know anything. I'd recognise the odd piece of music, but unlike yourself, Shay, I wouldn't recognise what opera it's from. You know, I'm not an expert.
Thank you for that.
Yes, because I know you are an absolute expert. He's looking at me now, delighted that I've just complimented him. Okay, basically, of course, the Julia Roberts and Richard Gere moment, and do you know that?
Because Pretty Woman is based loosely on La Traviata.
Now, loosely.
Very loosely. It's a bit like Miss Saigon is loosely based on Madame Butterfly.
Okay. Well, the funny thing is, it's amazing the amount of women of a certain age when you mention opera or at the opera that mention Pretty Woman. And that scene where Julia Roberts is watching the opera and a tear falls down, that just rolls down the cheek, her cheeks, because it's so moving. And absolutely, just like the movie, it is very, very,
so
very
tell us, where
emotional.
Did you go? Where did you go to see the opera?
I went to Glyndebourne.
Glyndebourne? Where is it?
Glyndebourne or Glyndebourne?
Is that near Crumlin?
No, it's in Sussex.
In Sussex.
In a beautiful part of England that I'd never been to before. East Sussex. Now, I'd been to London funerals, weddings. Yeah,
it's about 50 miles from London.
Yeah, but hold on a second. My experience of England is Kilburn, Camden, funerals, weddings, very much the Irish in London who've been there a very, very long time, all my relatives. But this side, this part of England is stunning. It's like, you know, the fields are actually designed, Shay. They are definitely designed. They're manicured, they're designed, and it's in a valley, and it's very near a village called Lewis and not very far from Brighton. So you can fly into Gatwick, get a taxi or get a train and you can get there. So it's not difficult to get to. But I'd never heard of it. And the amount of people around me said, you've never heard of it? And I said, no, I'm really embarrassed. I'm going there, but I never heard of it. But you're better off not hearing of it because then it's a real voila and it is an experience. It is truly an experience. Now, the only thing I would say to you that I did ask the question beforehand, will I be bored?
Well, I think it's a question a lot of people ask about opera, whether they've seen it in Wexford or they've seen it at various theatres around the country, whether they've seen it at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. Stephen Falloon is sitting quietly beside you. The manager of the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, who was with you, who accompanied you on the run.
And it was good to have him with me because I felt I had an expert. But apart from all of that, what a wonderful travelling companion. I laughed so much. We had such a giggle and we kind of, no offence to the people we met, were quite posh. We kind of did laugh a bit at them as well because it is quite posh.
It definitely, because it's black tie is compulsory. When you go to see it there, you have to put on...
You have to wear evening clothes.
Evening clothes.
You need a dress.
And a lot of them have drivers and they're dropped off and the drivers come back to get them. It is another world, you know.
We got a taxi, which was kind of like a driver, but not as expensive. So
it's like Bob Hope and Bing Crosby on the road to Morocco, except on the road to Glenbourne. Did you fly out together?
Yes, we did.
We shared a room and everything. No, we didn't. I just threw that in.
I've seen it on YouTube.
Glyndebourne is absolutely posh and it's absolutely beautiful. So first person I met in Glyndebourne was Vicky, the media manager, and she brought me on a tour.
Glyndebourne is the only opera house in Europe to be 100% powered by renewable energy. The turbine was launched in January 2012 by David Attenborough and a whole collection of wonderful supporters. So we had sort of 200-300 people up on the site. Very, very cold, I have to say. But it's about 10 years in the making. So we had to get planning permission. We had to encourage people that it's a thing of beauty. So it's very iconic now. Probably, you know, took us a while to get there, I think, with locals. But everything you see on stage is powered by that one turbine. So it's a pretty incredible feat for us and any opera house, actually. So we're very proud. And I also love this particular view because you get the modern, the iconic turbine with the beautiful Henry Moore that's on permanent display here. So it's one of my favourite little visions of Glyndebourne.
Do
Just to describe the Henry Moore we're looking at, quite a voluptuous lady.
She is indeed. She is. She's been here on permanent display for about 10 years, I think, something like that. So they haven't asked for it back yet.
It's wonderful to see a voluptuous woman.
Well, I think so. You'll see lots tonight, I'm sure.
Looking forward to it. Can you, for one moment, just geographically describe to us where we are on the map of England for those at home listening?
So we are in the southeast, on the south coast, and we are sat in the heart of the South Downs, which 2 years ago became a national park. So we're one of the national parks in England. I don't like to guess at how big the South Downs National Park is, but it's pretty huge. And Glyndebourne has its own sort of basin within that. So we also have our own microclimate, which you can't see today.
But I have noticed that in some of the plants and these large, huge ferns I saw on the way in.
That's right. And actually, we've just walked past our tropical garden. So it's one of the only places in this part of the country where you will see banana trees and very tropical products growing, basically. And the gardens team here always say that that's to do with the weather and the microclimate that we have. So you could have snow one day, beautiful steaming hot sunshine the next day, horrible rain. And that, in fact, is another reason why the turbine's been so successful. So it works for us.
I'm walking through the gardens here in Glyndebourne, and it is amazing. People have come with, you know, their boxes with their ice in them, their ice packs, their wine, their picnics. They're all setting up, and the style, there's a lady behind me with a midnight navy evening dress and the most stunning sort of parasol or umbrella to match. It's gorgeous here. It's like something from one of those Sense and Sensibility movies. You know, Mr. Darcy any minute now will just arrive on a horse and ask me to, I don't know, go for a walk by the river. I'm walking by the river, just as I'm speaking. And another lovely couple have just passed. A lady in a beautiful, sparkling evening dress. And again, everyone is here quite nice and early. I think they're quite anxious to get their spots, especially the shady spots. It's 28 degrees today in Glyndebourne, so it's very, very warm. And in the far field, I can see some sheep. It's black tie. Dress code is very, very strict here. And a lot of members. And to be honest, I don't think I'm speaking out of place. Very, very wealthy members.
The brilliant thing about the black tie dress code here at Glyndebourne is it's been with us from the very beginning. And it's part of John Christie's founding principle. John was the very first Christie member who founded Glyndebourne. And he believed that the audience should be as respectful to the work that was going on stage as the performers were with the dedication that they put into rehearsals. So he felt that everybody should be smartening their black tie as a mark of respect for all of that work that had gone on stage.
I kind of agree with them. When I was told I had to wear an evening dress, I went, oh God, really, in this heat? But when you get here, you'd look funny if you didn't make the effort.
Yeah, and actually, fashion's open to everybody, so how you interpret that black tie is a fantastic element of the whole Glyndebourne experience.
Well, I'm already loving being here because I'm standing in a very groomed field, by the way, garden, actually, a very large garden. The shrubs, the trees are absolutely gorgeous. I'm surrounded by the sheep are on the other side of a wooden fence. Everything is so quaint and so pretty, and everybody is just so relaxed. They're all having a few glasses of wine before the show starts. Now, we've just turned the corner. There's more people setting up. Everyone actually has set up. There's rugs on the grass. They're all sitting down. I've just seen a couple, and they look like Yoko Ono and John Lennon. God rest them. They actually do. It's the sort of place John Lennon would have come to anyway, I'd say. Claire, what number am I?
You are number 29 today.
Okay. And you have it all ready for me?
It is. It's all pre-packed. We did it this morning with all your food collected and ice with your champagne, and your hamper is all packed this morning as well with your crockery.
That's all part of the service.
It definitely is, yes.
Yes, I'll pick up the bill on the way out. I dread it. Okay, so do you work here for the summer?
I do. This is a summer job between university terms. Fabulous. A lot of people that work here are very local, so it's an absolutely perfect summer job, and obviously working in the most beautiful grounds, it's just ideal.
Now, do most people bring their own picnics?
A lot of people do, but the Leith picnics are very popular. Today we're very busy, obviously, because the weather is just fabulous, so a lot of people do use the Leith service, but it's just so iconic having your picnic on the Glyndebourne lawns, isn't it? In your wicker hamper, you have all your crockery, cutlery, glassware and bread rolls. Then in your cool bags, you have all your food and any pre-order drink you may have, all kept cold with ice blocks for you. So it'll be perfectly fresh for the interval.
So would it be sort of tradition to have a little bit now before the actual performance?
And what a lot of people do is they pick at their starters now or pick at their cheese board or something like that now, which is in the sun before they're going, and then have their main dinner in the long interval.
So is this a tradition? A bottle of champagne before the performance?
It is the tradition, absolutely. But it doesn't have to be a bottle of champagne. It can be anything you like. As we say, you could bring a ham and mustard sandwich from home if you wanted to. Or you can go the full dining experience, candelabra, a whole kit and caboodle.
Could be a bottle of stout and a hang sandwich, as they say along.
It could be. Are you ready?
You have no idea what I just said there. I love it. You were so polite. It could be. Are you ready?
Welcome to Glyndebourne.
I want to know more about the hamper. What was in the hamper?
I know, it is amazing, isn't it? You can order, you can pre-order a picnic basket, right? And as you just heard there, and then your picnic is brought down to you, and you can have your table booked, you know, your picnic table and chairs. Now I have to say, the regulars, those who are members, and 80% of the audience are actual members of Glyndebourne. They're not just
And the memberships are passed down from generation to generation.
It's an exclusive membership, is it?
Well, it's hard to get membership for it because it's been going on for nearly 100 years. And basically, families take it and then they pass it on to their children and then their children's children. So it is quite...
There was one guy there and he was with his dad, and I think you'll hear him later on just commenting about the production and the show. And his dad was 96. So they've always come. He came as a young boy, he came as a man, and now he's coming and bringing his dad. So it's all in one. You know, you arrive there. People arrive very early, so they get the best spot, obviously, in the shade. And it was 28 degrees, Chase. So it was really, really warm, really, really hot. But they're so organised. They're so... I'm going to say something.
I have to say, in Britain, when they do these things, they really do them well. They do them properly. Just like Wexford does a great job as well. Well, slightly different feel to it, I'm sure.
But English,
they do
people are
such a good
so
job.
Organized.
They love a queue. They love a queue.
But there's the big hamper, and then they've got it plugged into the car, you know, to keep it nice and cold.
Fridges.
I refer you to my previous question. What's in the hamper?
Oh yeah, there was a starter and there was a main course.
Oh, you're skipping. Come on.
Yeah, so we got
Stephen. Excuse me, Stephen. What was in the hamper, Stephen?
We got lovely asparagus. We got
wrapped in Parma ham.
No, actually not wrapped in Parma, which I was a bit disappointed by because that would have given it a wee bit of a posh touch.
Did they have hollandaise sauce with it?
There was hollandaise sauce with it.
That's fine.
There was a little bit of caviar.
Yeah, there was Bellini.
Bellini. Mm.
And a nice little pancake, yeah. Mm.
And then there was a couple of other things. And then main course, we got roast beef, we got salmon, we got quiche, we got potato salad. It was like...
This was between two of you?
There was four at our table.
So you had a
but
table.
I could have ate for tea.
And did you have to carry the hamper, or was it just on the
no,
table?
No, it was all delivered for us.
It's all delivered for you.
No, cold. So it was cold. A cold week, because it was 28 degrees. It was... And, you know, for the men...
Is it in a basket?
It's in a basket for the men. Like, we were wearing black tie, so it is quite hot. So you actually need stuff to cool you down to it. Some lovely cold white wine. Mm-hmm.
Within the hamper.
Yeah. Within the hamper as well, too.
And it was like €100 or something for the hamper?
£300.
Between the four of us. So it was €100 each. Now, whether that was good value for money...
I have to say, I didn't think the food was great, if I was to be honest.
€100.
Does that mean of me? Does that mean of me?
No, it's your opinion.
I would say the food was good, but I don't think it was worth that amount of money.
It's very hard to cater for that many people.
But I was looking at the people beside me.
It's 1,200 seater, isn't it?
Who had brought their own, and I really wanted to ask them, give us a bit of that.
And there's three restaurants there as well, too. We chose to eat out. There wasn't that many of us that the picnic was supplied by the company, because I think most people are cute enough and they bring their own.
Not to pay £300.
Yeah. £300.
But it is an amazing... I mean, the gardens are absolutely phenomenal, Jay, and the house. There's the old house and the new house. I mean, this house was built back in the 15th century, but obviously it's been...
So the house was there originally, and then somebody decided that they were going to hold operas there. Who was that?
It was a love affair. I love it. This woman, and Audrey and John. John Christie owned the house, and he fell in love with a wonderful singer, Audrey Milmay, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Milmay. And she was absolutely beautiful, and she was an amazing singer. And he was just besotted with her. They married, and he even put this amazing room in the house, which is called the organ room. And there's this massive organ in one of the rooms downstairs, which would have been maybe originally the drawing room. And it's stunning. And really, it's all because of her. And there's these beautiful pictures around the house of her in her real fur back in the day and her real pearls. And she used to tour quite a bit herself, especially in Canada. So she was a very, very glamorous lady. And it's actually, now maybe it's me being romantic, just talking about Julia Roberts and Pretty Woman, but it's very much his love for her and his affection for her. And this is a dedication to her. Now, it's still in the family.
And give her something to do.
Just unlike Pretty Woman.
No, she wasn't a courtesan.
A courtesan.
We'll say courtesan.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's still in the family. The Christie family still chair the committee that run it and
the
own
grandson.
It. The grandson. And George Christie only died this year. He seemed to be a very, very popular chairman.
Yes.
He did great work there. So it is a family-run business, but they do get state help or state finance when it comes to touring.
And were the operas originally held in the house?
Yes. In the organ room, but now they have a 1,200 purpose built, and it's kind of really weird.
1,200 seater,
because it's in the middle of nowhere. So, like, to have this really beautiful, state of the art 1,200 seater.
Is it a traditional proscenium arch?
No, it's not, because
like your theatre is proscenium arch.
It's not, but it sort of is proscenium arch,
which means
like
the border as such around it. I don't know, like a frame. It frames the stage.
It's not really framed, so it's more like open than that. So, because it's like it's only for Glyndebourne Opera. There are no other shows that perform there during the year, only Glyndebourne Opera. And this really beautiful state-of-the-art 1,200-seater auditorium, which is specifically designed for the opera goer in
So Mike. The acoustics must be...
Acoustics were amazing.
Amazing. No mics, no microphones,
mics.
Live orchestra, absolutely amazing. Wow.
And it was the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra that play for Glyndebourne.
Very hard to get the balance between an orchestra and the singers on the stage in the pit as well. You know, if you let the orchestra loose, you won't hear the singers. So the conductor really has to keep a hold of the orchestra.
Oh, okay. Because I felt I loved the way the chorus were playing up. You know, they were up with the main characters in the production, so everything was quite near you. It wasn't back at the beyond. You know, sometimes when you're watching a big show like that, you kind of feel you're 100 miles away. There was very, you know, it was very intimate production. Now, I know nothing about La Traviata, right? I only knew the song, which is the famous drinking song, right? I recognise that.
Brindisi.
But I loved that the costumes were like 1920s costumes.
Oh, okay.
They were extreme, beautiful Parisian design hats, whether they were designed in Paris or not, it just looked like that. So I loved that. And for somebody like me who doesn't know much about opera, that was another layer, another attraction for me. Massive.
And of course, it's a Verdi opera. It's sung in Italian.
Yes.
But did they have subtitles?
They had
subtitles.
No, excuse me, I learned this morning.
Sir titles.
Brownie points, best girl in the course.
Which is exactly the same thing as subtitles. So
it's not on a screen.
Sounds posher.
It does sound, but you always sound posher.
Did you find, not knowing anything about La Traviata, did you know the story before you went? Did you read it in the programme?
I kind of had an idea of the story, but even though I knew all the elements to it, because I suppose every opera has a bit of lust and a bit of revenge and a bit of anger
tragedy.
And a bit of death.
Adultery.
But it didn't stop the...
A lot of operas. I would go on, keep... Celine Byrne was in here a few weeks ago and she gave me the list of the seven deadly sins, and that's opera. Go on.
Okay. So I didn't know that.
It has all those elements, but it still doesn't take from the fact that you know that she's going to die, because you get caught up with the intensity. And, you know, I'm not, again, I don't play
music.
Did
you just give away the end?
Yeah, for God's sake, everyone knows the
end. I think you know that from the very start.
But it doesn't really matter, because you actually get caught up and you're bawling. And actually, what was sadder than her dying was her potential father and the father of her lover, who's trying to convince her to let him go, when she just too easily she let it go. And I, you know, that was so sad, how she was fighting about her love for him.
Tell us a little bit about La Traviata, what it's
about. La Traviata,
about.
To
Give
me
us a
now,
synopsis
Stephen will tell us about La Traviata. Violetta is a upper class prostitute, really. I mean, somebody's going to ring in and say
courtesan.
She's a courtesan. Well, she's not a courtesan. Is somebody that works in the royal court.
Well, there are different levels of courtesan.
No, there's different levels of courtesan.
Honest,
she is technically a courtesan.
Can I just say something?
I'm just saying.
This is 2014 and I'm a woman. She's a prostitute. It's okay. She's an upper class prostitute.
But in terms of when the opera set, they would never use that word. They would say a courtesan.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have worn 1920s clothes either. There you go. Anyway, so her clients...
This is why I wanted to work with her.
Her clients are upper class anyway, and they're all wonderful and she's wonderful. Now, you notice a little bit of a little cough at the beginning, just a little idea, a little hint. Only if Stephen told me that might happen, I wouldn't have noticed. But anyway, she meets Alfredo and he is just gorgeous and he is handsome. And he's, I think he's a little bit younger than her. Don't give out to me about that. But he looked a little bit younger, but doesn't matter. He's gorgeous. He's da-da-da-da. And they fall in love. She doesn't want to fall in love because it doesn't suit her business to fall in love, because she can't fall in love with every potential client and blah, blah, blah. So next thing, they're mad about each other. And that moment when she submits to it, you know, she kind of gives in to the love. And it is just, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And the conductor is mouthing the words with the singers. I've never seen that before. Is that common in opera?
Well, the conductor's always very involved in the
moment.
Depends
on the conductor. So he's there. He's sometimes using it as a cue as well to singers to bring them in and bring them out, because it'd be very complicated.
Yes, Sir Mark Elder. And he's a phenomenal. He's singing with them and he's... Anyway, it's all wonderful and they fall in love and the potential father-in-law doesn't approve. It is every year.
He doesn't approve because he's saying that you're stopping my other daughter from getting married because you're a courtesan or a prostitute. So he says...
So my son can't marry a prostitute.
So he says, Alfredo...
If he does, then...
He says to Violetta, lay off and go away from her. And she says, okay, I'll do that. And then unfortunately, she goes...
We're at the end of Act 1. Let's hold Act 2 for a second. Pasha them, the nuok, the lave, equivini conchella. Welcome back. We are talking Opera Blanitas here, and Stephen Falloon from the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. We're just about to finish the plot. So Alfredo, who is Violetta's lover, his father has come and said, do not marry her, because if you do, my other daughter won't be able to get married and the family will end. And he makes a bargain with her. What's the bargain?
The bargain is just don't ever see Alfredo again.
There's no bargain.
It just, he appeals to her good nature. That's okay. What he's doing. He said, if you really love...
Lana's not really sure. If you really love him, then you'll leave him.
Well,
and
it is. It's that old thing. If you really, really love him, you'll...
We're never
going to
get out of this maelstrom of this plot. What happens then?
So then what happens then, she goes to a party in Paris and she meets Alfredo and she says, Alfredo, that's it. We're
Stop
over.
In the name of love.
Stop in the name of love. We are true. And I'm in love with another guy, a baron. And he is absolutely devastated. But she's lying. We know she's lying.
Yeah.
And she's only doing that to protect him. So then that's... And then cut to the last act. And she's dying.
She's dying of consumption.
She's dying of consumption. She's dying of a weak hold.
Didn't she get a bit confused and think that... Didn't Alfredo get... She's not dying of consumption. She does get... there's a little confusion as Alfredo thinks that it's his father that she's in love with.
Oh, yes.
And there's
yes.
a lot... And there's a duel. Oh, there's loads goes on.
Yes. We didn't see any duel.
No, because the duel happens off stage.
It happens off stage.
Yeah. Off stage.
But it's much easier to stage it off stage.
Was I asleep? They're
you spoke to some more people and there is a bit of an Irish connection.
I know, you can't go anywhere. It's so true, you can't go anywhere. I've spotted an Irish man in the cast. Porrick Roan, how did you end up in La Traviata?
Yeah, well, they hold auditions in Dublin. So we just auditioned. It was 2 years ago I auditioned for them. And then I was here last summer. I'm back again this summer in Traviata and a few other productions. And I'm one of the young artists here this year as well. So, yeah, there's a good few Irish here. I mean, fairly rare.
How do you end up working in opera? I mean, at what age did you realise you could sing?
Well, it was through my secondary school teacher, music teacher, who decided to give me an audition with Dr. Veronica Dunn. I didn't know who Ronnie was, so I started lessons then with Ronnie in the academy. And I didn't do music as my undergraduate degree, but it was going quite well. And then I decided to just go for the master's in the academy in Dublin. So I ended up doing a 2-year master's. And then this was kind of one of my first professional jobs here last year and back again this year.
And tell me this, how does this compare to performing in actual venues and cities? You know, how does this compare? Like, we're out here in the middle of nowhere now. It is beautiful and the gardens are amazing. Yeah. Every time I turn the corner, I go, oh my God, oh my God. But how does it compare?
Yeah, well, I live down, I'm in Diggs and Lewis. But even just, I have the car over and driving out over the hills to Glyndebourne in the morning. I mean, it's such a commute. And there are people that would come down from London as well. And you're just leaving the city and you're coming down to this idyllic place in the middle of the countryside and down by the lake for lunch. And it's just another world. It really is.
Is it just as exciting for you to work here as it is for us to actually attend?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the level of performers they get here for the principal roles are just like world class, and the productions and everything, I mean, they put so much money and time into it, and you have such a long rehearsal period that the end results are amazing. And then you see the people here every night that just seem to have a ball.
Is that the aim? Is that for you to get the principal role?
Well, one day, yeah. Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to be the lead in the opera, so we'll see one day. But you've got to start somewhere, and chorus is a pretty good place to start, so you work your way up from there.
Okay, it's the interval, and I found it really intense. I found it very, very, very intense. Mm-hmm. I know how it ends, but right. You still can't help but be captured by... And I'm no expert. I mean, I'm reading the subtitles. You know, right. I am, because I don't understand what's being said, what's being mm-hmm. sang. But God, she is amazing, isn't she? Violetta.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. She's only 27 and she's going to be world class. But that's where Glyndebourne is famous for. It's for finding these young talents just at the cusp of their career. And you will see her name now in the years ahead. It's just, that's why it's so exciting for us as well to be sharing the stage with someone like her. And to hear that voice, just it's phenomenal.
I wish everyone could see your face. You're lit up talking about it. It's absolutely brilliant. Now, La Traviata is coming to Borthgart Theatre in December.
Right.
I don't know the answer, but will you be in it?
I will. I'll be in the chorus and I'm covering a role as well. So you never know, if one of the leads goes sick, I might be up there at the principals.
You never wish it to happen,
no,
but you
no,
kind of do
never
too. Maureen, thank you so much.
No, it's nice to have the Irish over here.
Where in Ireland are you from?
I live in Dublin. Grew up in County Meath, Dunboyne. So,
brilliant. Yeah, I'm a Meath woman myself. We lost last weekend. We won't talk about that. Thanks a million, Mark.
No
enjoy
problem.
The rest
enjoy
of the performance.
Second half.
He sounds lovely.
Oh, he was so lovely. And do you know what was really cute? Oh, really cute. I'd put on Twitter that morning going over to an opera, don't know much about it kind of thing. And he responded and then he came looking for us at the interval to have a little chat. And he was so nice. But I was nervous about asking, are you going to be in the Borthgart performances? Because even though it's the same tour, apparently they can change them around. And I was kind of bold of
performers
me.
Don't really mind. They're used to traveling all over the world. No.
And this one specifically, they're changing the cast for it. But most of the course are coming with us, are coming to see it, or are coming to play it with us.
When
Dublin.
Is it going to be in the Borthgart, by the way? We're talking about that.
So like literally Glyndebourne, it's the first time that they've performed in Dublin in 23 years. They played in the Old Point in 1991. So this is the first time 23 years. They're coming to us in December 3rd, 4th and 6th, and we're very excited.
Give those dates again?
December 3rd, 4th and 6th.
I hope he's right about
the dates.
Of course
he is. This man knows everything about everything. You got to talk to some other people who were there as well. I had to listen to this clip earlier as well. Why does your accent change? Why did you become... Tell us the circumstances of recording this clip.
Can I say
your
something?
Honor.
You have no idea what I went through having... these people don't want to talk. They don't want to talk. They're not like Irish people who are dying to talk. They saw the microphone and they just were horrified of the idea of this microphone coming towards them. And a lot of them they're not in the piece, of course, because I'm going, would you mind if I ask you a question? I would mind. And they'd walk away really, really, really quickly. So it wasn't easy to get anyone to talk to me, which isn't usually my experience. It's kind of weird. But at the same time, they are posh and they're very reserved.
You're very a bit hung up about them being posh.
No, I'm not, but that's my
you're
accent.
Quite
is
posh
going,
yourself.
What did you think of the show? Next thing, what did you think of the show? I actually sound like that.
Listen, that happens to Irish that happens to Irish dignitaries in the presence of the Queen. You know, there's quite a famous case which I'll tell you about off air.
Okay, but you know what? It is just that they are that little bit more reserved than us. And the other thing is, while I'm going around with the microphone, they're running away from me. So some of them don't even want to talk to me. So it was really difficult to get someone to talk to. Very strange.
Let's have a listen to Blondet's funny voice.
Sorry, I'm from Ireland, Irish Radio. This is my first time at any opera, and I just
any opera.
Any opera?
Think are you recording this now?
Yes, I am. I thought it was wonderful. What did you think?
I thought it was gorgeous. Beautiful.
She's fantastic.
She's fabulous.
She's a new star.
She's so beautiful.
She's amazing, isn't she?
Do you go to opera often?
Yes.
And how does this rate?
It was marvellous. I didn't like the production very much, but she was fantastic.
Oh.
And yeah, it was great.
I loved Alfredo as well.
Alfredo
is glamorous.
Very glamorous. Thank you so much for talking
pleasure,
to me.
Thank
you. Isn't that great to hear experienced people, not like rookies like me? What did you think?
Oh, I just thought it was fantastic. Oh. I was in tears, as were my friend. You know, it was beautiful. Beautiful, because it's humanity, isn't it?
It's
a story about love. And
I think opera is grown-ups cartoons, as in it's everything you're allowed to feel. Lust, love, revenge.
Everything,
Thank you.
Come again.
Oh, I hope to. Sorry. Did you enjoy La Traviata?
I really enjoyed it, yes.
And you're from France?
Yeah, I'm from France, yes. The first time actually I come to this opera, it's really good. The sound is great, the actors are amazing, so well done.
Did you cry?
No, I didn't cry, but I felt a lot.
And why is this place, this location, this venue, why is it so popular?
Well, it's built up a reputation over many years.
Quite a regular. We're fairly local, and my father there, who is 96 years old, brought me for the first time when I was 21 years old. So
it's a generational thing. It's a tradition in some families.
It is, yes.
Okay. What do you think of La Traviata?
It's beautiful. I cried my eyes out at the end of the first half.
So did I. Had you seen it before?
No, but I'm very sad. I've watched Pretty Woman about 20 times.
Well, I had a Julia Roberts moment in the box.
Very romantic, because you remember having heard it in Pretty Woman. So.
And have you been here before?
Yes, came last year to see Marriage of Figaro, which was equally amazing production. Yeah.
I can safely say the chorus was amazing.
That's because you have a certain member in front of you.
I do have, yeah. No, we enjoyed it. It was fantastic. It was the whole experience is just wonderful.
Have you ever been here before?
No, we haven't. And we only live up the road, so it's silly really, isn't it?
I thought it was wonderful, but I don't know if that's okay to say because I'm no expert. It was very emotional. Did you find it emotional?
Yes, very moving ending. Very effective too.
Even though you know what the ending is, it still doesn't take from the drama of the ending.
That's true.
So that's it. The night has fallen. It's dark. It's 10:30. I am leaving Glyndebourne. And I did cry. I did cry. I have to say, I'm a bit of a sucker for the subtitles. It helps to follow what's being said. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And I feel I've been here for 2 days and I only got here sort of this afternoon. So it's the whole experience of this place. Glyndebourne is, without a doubt, one of those on the bucket list. Something like this you have to do before you die. Absolutely. Really, really enjoyed it. And thanks to The Money Show, because sometimes through work you have the best experience, and this is one of them.
Well, I have to say, you really appreciate it. Liked it. And you'd recommend it to people to go.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely would recommend it. And I even, you know, well, I know he's not listening, but I was just thinking on the way back, I was saying, Stephen, our anniversary is 20 years married next summer. And it would be, because he is so into music. He would just, he loved the idea of, I told him there was no microphones, there was no desk, it was just an orchestra, live music. And, you know, it's every, your heart is doing 90, but when you want to kind of, you know, you want to move and look at somebody and say, oh my God, isn't this amazing? Or even a visual. They don't move.
They don't
Everyone
speak.
Is very still.
There's no. Is there ice cream on sale at the interval? No.
If you had a packet of Maltesers at this, you'd be kicked out. No sweets. No munching.
There's three acts in La Traviata, I think. Do they run? They run two into one.
And yes. Yes.
There isn't two intervals.
Yeah. There's one in one interval. Four acts and two acts.
So two
inside.
And two.
But that interval was very long.
It was a 90-minute interval.
Did you have not what?
It was a 90-minute interval because the whole idea is that what they want you to do is relax and enjoy it, so that they're actually encouraging the 90-minute interval, that you go out, you have your wee picnic. You have a glass of wine.
A glass of wine.
You make an experience of it.
Darlings have to be picked up and brought back in and put in their seats.
Well, there was a few.
Did you get the sense of the picnic thing? I went, my first ever garden party, I was President Michael G. Higgins sent me, I got a note to say, a request from the President, would you host
a
garden
party? Oh yeah, I've done a few of them, yeah.
For musical societies.
No, it's not like that.
In the Arras. But I have to say, that was very... People upped their game in the sense. People came dressed up. They were looking forward to it. Their little tiny cakes, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but
there's a nice feeling. Was that kind of feeling there?
No, the Orson and Northern Garden parties are lovely, and it's lovely when you're invited. And I know a lot of people and they try and mix it every year. But, you know, it didn't matter who you were or what you were at that or who you are. You all feel special. This, everyone talks very nice. Very, very nice.
We could hear that in the tape as your accent changed.
The queue. I know. We were in the queue. We kind of skipped the queue, but we didn't realise we were skipping the queue to get a taxi. And they were a bit horrified at us. Yeah, they didn't like our brashness. And you think I'm brash, Stephen? You should see him in action.
And we started.
Where's the taxis?
We started managing the taxi.
Listen, when the English heard that accent, they were all let you go.
Exactly.
Shay. Well, listen.
Shay.
You've got to do the jokes.
So
is there going to be a 90-minute interval at the board?
No, there's not. But what we're going to do, because coming to us in December, and the run up to Christmas, which I think is the perfect time for it. People can wear a black tie or people cannot wear a black tie. It's completely up to them. We're going to be doing some seasonal picnic baskets that you can enjoy.
£300.
It certainly will not be for that amount. They'll not be free, but they'll be an awful lot more affordable. And indeed, our ticket prices are really affordable too, because like if you go to Glyndebourne, you can pay up to €350 for a ticket, whereas our top price tickets are just over 100, and we have tickets from €35. So you're getting to see one of the world's best opera companies for €35, and I think that's really good. But the seasonal picnic baskets, I'm really looking forward to. Our chef is working away on them, and I think it'll create that little bit of specialness on the week.
What a salesman. Website. Go on, give us your website. You gave us everything else. boardgosheenergytheatre.ie if you want to go. And check out Wexford Opera. And if you see operas coming...
Check out opera.
Opera's very expensive to stage, so it's difficult. And
there's other great Lyric Opera. Lyric Opera do some brilliant operas there on in the Concert Hall and the Gaiety every year. There's a lot of choice. An opera theatre company, Opera Northern Ireland. A lot of great opera in this country, and we're very, very lucky.
And some great talented people, some great singers as well. Even go to a musical. Go to something local. Go to something live. Go see live music, actors on stage, musicians playing.
Absolutely.
It's well worth it. You'll get a lot out of it.
And you don't have to understand every word.
We'll have the subtitles. And we'll be crying.
Sir titles.
And if you see a red-headed lady in the middle of the audience sobbing her heart out while chewing on a bottle of champagne, that'll be bloody.
She did cry loudly. She does cry loudly. I can testify to that. I sat beside her.
Stephen,
shut up. Seriously,
Stephen Falloon to the board, Gosh Energy. Thank you very much, Blondie. You're staying with us.
Oh.
Music. More music.